Hello, and welcome to the Fighting Moose Podcast. I'm your host and narrator, Jason Hendrickson. Now, if you've been here for a while, you know what comes next. But if this is your first time, welcome. The Fighting Moose Podcast is a podcast where I retell stories, some fictional and some historical, that can be enjoyed by people of all ages. Did you see what I did there, John? I changed it up. Anyway, today I found a random book which I might stick with for a few episodes. The book is titled Stories of Grit, written by Archer Wallace. The story is titled The Immigrant Lad Who Became a King of Industry. Now, you may be familiar with who this story is about, but if not, after you listen to today's story, I would definitely recommend the series from the History Channel titled The Men Who Built America. It was a short biography series that aired in 2012 and will tell you more about today's character, as well as other great inventors and business people of early America. Now, let's turn to today's story. I hope you enjoy. Let's begin. Immigrant Lad Who Became a King of Industry. In November 1837, the year in which Queen Victoria ascended the throne, Andrew Carnegie was born in Dunfermline, Scotland. His father was a weaver, and before the invention of the steam loom, made a comfortable, if modest, living. Andrew's mother early impressed upon him that economy was a virtue, a lesson which he never forgot in later days. On one occasion, Mrs. Carnegie asked her children to repeat a proverb from the Bible. When it came to Andrew's turn, he stood up and said, "Take care of the pence, and the pounds will take care of themselves." While Andrew was mistaken in thinking this was in the Bible, it shows how deeply it had been fixed in his mind. One day, Andrew's father came home very dejected. "Andy," he said, "I have no more work." Up till that time, all weaving had been done on hand looms, and the introduction of the steam looms threw hundreds of men out of work. Andrew never forgot how bitter and harsh his father's words sounded. No more work. That meant no more money, and poverty stared them in the face. Andrew's father could not obtain work in the town. Hundreds of others, like himself, were thrown out of work. It was no use moving to another town, for conditions were the same everywhere. After some anxious days of planning together, the family decided that the only thing to do was to follow the example of some relations and move to the United States. The Carnegies sold their hand looms and household belongings and got ready for their long voyage. There were only two children, Andrew and his younger brother Tom. Those were the days of sailing vessels, and crossing the Atlantic meant a rough voyage of many weary weeks, and after that, long and tiresome railway journeys. Andrew was only 11 at this time. The family reached Pittsburgh safely, and Mr. Carnegie obtained work at a cotton factory. Soon after this, Andrew got a position as a bobbin boy at $1.20 a week. He was delighted to be actually earning money. At the end of the first week, when his wages were put into his hand, he felt as happy as a king. $1.20 earned by his own efforts. How proud he felt. The work was hard, and the hours of labor very long. He worked from early morning till late at night, with only an interval of 40 minutes for dinner. After a time, he got another situation, which was, if anything, even harder. This work was to fire the boiler and run the steam engine which drove the machinery of a small factory. The work was so hard that it soon began to tell upon his health. Night and day he was haunted by the possibility of a calamity, and in his sleep he would often put out his hand to test the water gauge. Those were the dark days for the young Scotch boy, but he determined not to bring his troubles into the home. He was blessed with a keen spirit of determination to succeed, and no matter how hard he found his work, he never complained. There was poverty in the home, but it was honest poverty, and he was not ashamed of it. He often had to deny himself pleasures which other boys could afford, and had to wear his clothes long after they had become shabby, but nobody ever heard him grumble or complain. When he became 14, Andrew got a position as a telegraph boy at $3 a week. There was not a prouder boy in Pittsburgh. Besides the advance in wages, the work was healthier. He was so overjoyed with his position that soon he began to fear lest he should lose it. He was not acquainted with the business section of the city where he had to deliver most of his messages, but he overcame this by using his excellent memory. He committed to memory the exact location of all the business houses in the principal streets, so that when a telegram was handed to him, he knew at once where it had to be delivered. His regular habits and attention to his work soon attracted the attention of those over him, and at the age of 16, he was promoted to the position of telegraph operator at a salary of $300 a year. This advance came at the right time, for Andrew's father had just died, and the burden of carrying on the home fell upon Andrew's shoulders. Soon after this, he accepted a position with the Pittsburgh Division of the Pennsylvania Railroad at an increase of $10 a month. At this time, something happened which did much to change his whole life. Through the interest of his superintendent, it became possible for him to purchase 10 shares in the Adams Express Company for $500. Andrew's business instinct led him to see that it was a splendid opportunity, and his mother was just as anxious as he was to make the venture. After a consultation, they decided to mortgage the little home and buy the shares. This little transaction was destined to be the forerunner of many successful business deals. One day, while he was traveling on the railway, a man showed him the model of a sleeping car. Such things were at the time unknown, but Andrew saw instantly that the invention was a good one, and made arrangements for the inventor to meet the superintendent of the railroad. The outcome was that a company was formed to build sleeping cars, and Andrew Carnegie was one of the number. Soon after this, he was made superintendent of the Pittsburgh Division of the Pennsylvania Railroad. Not long after he was promoted to this position, the company began to make experiments with an iron bridge. Up to this time, all bridges had been built of wood. The experiments with iron proved successful. There had been so much delay on the railways by the bridges being broken or burned that the cast iron bridges were welcomed. Mr. Carnegie, with his keen business instinct, saw at once that iron bridges must displace the wooden ones. He formed a syndicate known as the Keystone Bridge Works, and his first undertaking was to build a bridge with a span of 300 feet over the Ohio River. Thus began the work of iron and steel constructions, which Mr. Carnegie followed up until he became known throughout the world as the Steel King. Before many years had passed, Mr. Carnegie not only owned his own immense iron and steel works, but also a fleet of steamers which were used to transport the iron ore across the Great Lakes. He built his own railroad to convey the ore from the lake ports to Pittsburgh, a distance of 425 miles. In 1900, the Carnegie Steel Company was organized with a capital of $100 million. The enormous concern gave employment to 45,000 people. One of the plants alone covers an area of 75 acres. It is no exaggeration to say that it is, by far, the greatest manufacturing concern of its kind in the world. When Mr. Carnegie decided to retire, he sold out his interest in the steel works for $250 million. It was said at that time that he could give away $35,000 a day and never touch his capital. For many years, he gave large sums of money for public libraries and other enterprises, which seemed to him to be deserving of assistance. Having worked his own way in the world, from a very humble beginning to a position of great power and influence, Mr. Carnegie never had much patience with lazy people. He would never tolerate around him what are known as deadheads. "Concentration," he said, "is my motto. First honesty, then industry, then concentration." He expected everyone in his employ to be anxious to do their best. Throughout his life, he was a man of good habits and a non-smoker, and attributed his vigor of mind and body to the fact that he avoided anything which would undermine his health. The careful religious training which he received in his humble home in Scotland had a lasting influence for good upon his life. Clean living, honesty, and devotion to his work, no matter how hard it was, made Andrew Carnegie one of the foremost businessmen of his generation.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed. That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Fighting Moose Podcast. Please join us next time as we read another exciting story. Today's music was provided by the artist Analog by Nature, and the audio clips were provided from NASA. For more information to download and or listen to audio or materials from all our recordings, or to contact us, please visit www.thefightingmoose.com, or you can follow the links in the show notes. If you enjoy the podcast, please leave us a review wherever you get your podcast or on iTunes and tell a friend. Thank you for your patronage, and as always, try and do a random act of kindness every day.
Mission complete, Houston. After serving the world for over 30 years, the space shuttle turned its place in history and has come to a final stop.